welcome to the Tink Biscuit podcast. Today we've got a new guest, that is.
Hi, my name is Dan. I'm from Bristol and I'm living in France. I'm a professional slackliner traveling the world and doing high end shows.
You say slackliner. Now, what is slacklining for people? Because I'm not too sure on like what it is. I mean, it's got something to do with straps and that, but for people who don't know, explain a bit about what slacklining is.
So slacklining, you may have seen truck straps on the motorway when you see trucks carrying heavy loads.
I use them in my job, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We take those things 1 inch wide and we rig them up at high points, usually between cliffs or between buildings. And so the activity in general is called slacklining. And that can be rigging a webbing between trees, between above the water or up high. And so it's called slacklining, waterlining and highlining.
So it's got them ratchets on the side, isn't it? That on the ends that you go and the sort of tighteners and like you snap them back.
When we're in the park we use ratchets, but when we're up high we use something a little more secure.
All right. Okay, so yeah. So like how high do you actually go when sort of slacklining?
Well, it can be anything from 5 meters to 500 meters high.
And how far have you done, or sort of how high have you done before?
I've been on a line 1,000 meters high.
1,000 meters.
Yeah, that was in Greenland last year.
But what does that weigh counting to feet?
Let me see, like around 3,000 feet.
Now that's high. Do you go with these clip things on, like harnesses, or are you just one of these mad heads that walk across with nothing on?
No, that's called free solo. I don't practice free solo. What I do is very safe. We use a climbing harness, which is attached to our line and the backup line also. And so when we fall, we hang on a rope that's the length of our leg. Mm-hmm. And we just use a special technique to climb back up the rope and get back on our line.
Is it quite scary when you fall? I could imagine it would be.
Yeah, in the beginning, when you don't know so well the rigging techniques and the gear, it feels like you're going to die. It feels like you're throwing yourself into the abyss. But after the first time, it holds. The second time, it holds. And you see your friends falling and it holds, you say to yourself, actually, the gear is safe, I'm not doing anything risky. And then the more you practice, the more you learn about why it holds, why is this secure. And that also puts you in a better mental zone that helps you to stay calm on the line if you know that the line is secure.
Yeah.
And yeah, that comes with time.
So have you ever thought about doing solo before, sort of sort of harnessed and doing it without a harness on?
I've thought about it, but it's not really something that attracts me too much. The freedom of being attached to the line is to be able to experiment with different moves and to let ourselves fall is also part of the game. We push the limits of our balance and we do tricks and we do special things on the line. Which we wouldn't be able to do if we had to stay 100% concentrated on our personal safety. And so it's thanks to the security that we use that we can explore in different directions. Cool. Push the limits.
But you do a special trick, because like anyone who's seen your Instagram, well, I've sort of seen your Instagram, you play the accordion as you're walking across, don't you?
Yeah, I play a few different instruments on the Highline. But yeah, the instrument that I'm traveling with now is an accordion. It weighs 5 kilograms, and
that's quite
this big thing. I carry it on my front, like it's kind of like a backpack, but that you would wear on the front of your body. Uh-huh. And it comes with new challenges to bring instruments on the Highland.
I would imagine how it is. How tight do you do the ratchets from sort of point to point? Is there any slackness in it? Is there a way of testing it on how tight you need slack lines? Or
Actually, when we rig our lines up high, often the lines are very loose. So that's measured by, it's the term we use is sag. So the distance lower than the anchor point that you are when you're in the middle of the line, that is described as sag. So often we use the rule of thumb is 10% of the length you're going to have a sag. So for example, a line of 10 meters long could have a sag of 1 meter down. So when you're in the middle, you're 1 meter lower. A line 100 meters long would have 10 meters of sag. And a line 1 kilometer long could have easily 100 meters of sag.
So, does it feel like walking up a hill once you go down into the sag and you're walking back up into the sag, or like from the sag, should I say?
It depends. It depends. On very like on every line, the final 5% of the line, the final 5% is going to be steep, whether it's going downhill or uphill. It's steep, and so often it's difficult to walk because of its steepness. Sometimes when the line is loose, it can be even so steep that as you're walking, your feet are sliding backwards on the line. And that can be quite scary. But if you stay calm, stay in control, it can be okay.
So how long have you done? You've done 3,000 foot up high.
Yeah.
What's some like the longest slack line walk you've done?
The longest slackline walk I did was 3 years ago in Morocco. We rigged a line that was 1,150 meters long. So that was, that's around 3,000 foot also. And that was a journey. That was the longest line I tried. And at the time, it was the longest line ever rigged. And so, at the time, it was a world record attempt. And so that brings some new pressure also. That brings the pressure of, whoa, this thing that I'm doing is the first time anyone's done it before. Are humans capable of doing that? Are we capable of staying concentrated that long? And is the gear, like, is it safe what we're doing? Or are we pushing the limits of the safety?
But how long did it take you to walk that?
It took me 48 minutes. But I walk fast on the line. Some people, to walk the same distance, they could take easily 2 or 3 hours from, like, just solid walking. Stand up in the beginning of the line and walk, 3 hours later, without sitting down, without stopping, to get to the other side.
That's crazy.
And so it's like an endurance. It's like a marathon. It's like a test, you know. You're in a maths test at school, but instead of the test lasting 1 hour, it lasts 3 hours, and you're concentrated the whole time.
What's the scariest situation you've been in from, like, sort of doing a slack line? What's some sort of the scariest thing you've done?
It's pretty scary to go with the instruments in the beginning, because surprisingly, it's something that can seem so innocent and relaxed, but in fact you're bringing an object with you on the line that can injure yourself, that can damage the line, and that can fall also. So it's about securing it in the right way and being confident enough and calm enough on the line that you know you're going to control the object you got with you, and to be calm enough also to play it. And so that's what we're working on.
I'm guessing when you've got someone else up there with you, you've got to change your style as like well of like walking and your technique, because like you've got extra weight, and if it's on your front, it changes the center of gravity. So I suppose you've got that too.
For sure, big time.
Like taking
big time.
How
it changes the way we stand up, for example.
Yeah.
Often when we start walking, we stand up from sitting, and so if I have the accordion on my front, it changes completely my way of standing up. And another challenge is that often we're doing these kind of performances in a show context where there's been rehearsals and there's the public and they're waiting, and finally it's your turn to go on. It's not just about going up and having fun, it's about getting on the line, standing up, and performing. It's like the chance of falling needs to be limited, because if you fall, you're not just letting yourself down, you're letting down the whole team, you're letting down the public, and yeah, that's a nice pressure.
It just adds to the concentration.
Yeah, for sure.
How did you get into it all, and how long you been doing it for? Because it's just a new thing, isn't it? It's just a few years old. So how did you?
Yeah.
And, like, especially now, it's your full time job, which is like a dream job. Where did it start? How did it get you into it? And how did you land on your feet, so to speak, in getting a full time job from it, and getting paid, and also to travel around the world?
Well, I started in my garden. In 2008, my sister and I had a slackline set, like what you see on trucks, with the ratchet and the strap. And we would set it up between trees in our garden. And after about 3 years of doing that casually, like setting it up once a month or so, or sometimes not setting it up for a few years, I once met a guy in my town, in Bristol, in the center of the town. Mm-hmm. He was in the same park as I was, also slacklining. And I went up to him. I'd never seen another slackliner. And he started talking to me about highlining. Highlining, the practice of taking the slackline up into the sky, rigging between cliffs. And my eyes went wide and I looked at him. I never thought I'd ever meet a real highliner. And he just casually invited me to come 2 weeks later. And so sure enough, he drove me to the spot. They had rigged the line a few days before, and I get up on my first high line, and that's when I, like, fell in love with the sport, discovered what it's like to control one's fear. It's a very natural reaction to be scared of the height. Like, it's very normal to feel that fear, but the more you work on high lining, the easier it gets, and the more you learn about your own fear. So fast forwards a few years where I would travel around Europe, going to highlining festivals. 3 years ago, I moved to France, where I joined a performance company called Huldus, and we travel the world proposing highline performances. Sometimes we're 4 and sometimes we're 10 performing together, and the show lasts 1 hour. And yeah, we've been in Africa, we've been in China. This year we were in Japan and Lebanon and Switzerland. And yeah, it's very exciting. It's moving very quickly. Sometimes my life feels like a blur. Sometimes it's just thinking about the next project. You have not so much time to reflect on the past, but it's very exciting. And it's a style of traveling and moving that I really enjoy.
So whereabouts are you doing a performance next then? You say you're from Bristol, moved to France. I like you slacklining in France at the minute.
Yeah. Well, our company is based in the south of France, in Marseille.
Oh, nice.
But often people ask us, where do you usually perform? Actually, there's nowhere that we usually perform, because we've never done a show in the same location before. We never done 2 shows in the same location. Often we do projects in France, around France, in different towns, sometimes in the nature, sometimes between buildings. And yeah, we're going to have some other projects in France. Our next show is going to be in Israel on the 7th of November, where we're going to be performing at a friend's wedding. We're going to have highlines rigged up, and we're going to be playing our instruments on the lines above the people.
That's really cool. So,
yeah.
Do like you teach people to slackline? Then does like people come up to and say, show us how to do it, or give us some tips? Well, I mean, if someone wanted to slackline, do they come sort of to you in France? Do you offer that service teaching?
No, I don't do that anymore. When I was studying, I was up in Newcastle, and I was running a student society in the university, where I would just do weekly sessions, encouraging people to join me and just discover the sport and give it a go, you know, try it out. And in every town in England, often you can type in on Facebook the name of the town and slacklining next to it. And that'll bring you to the Facebook group of the town. And this is true for many towns in the world. They have, it's a very small community still. And so the community is very tight. It means that you can easily meet people in the area, slacklining, mm-hmm. and you can just write to them and say, hey, when are you going out next? Can I give it a go? And like, I find the community very welcoming, and I think it's very easy for new people to get into it. Each year, I see new people getting into it, starting and progressing. Actually, like, the speed of progression of people who start now is much quicker than when I started slacklining. When I started, we didn't know anyone else who was doing it. We didn't really know what was possible in terms of tricks and like possibilities for highlining and different techniques. And now it's so vast that there's so much information online and like so many more people who are doing it that it's much easier to find highliners in your area.
Where do you get the straps from? If like, so if you want me to buy them, or like, is it exactly the same as the Van Lorry straps?
Not quite. Like a basic beginner strap, you could just go on eBay or Amazon and just type in slackline, and often the line will be 15 meters long, and it'll be a 2-inch line, which will come with a ratchet strap, and that's great for starting on. But otherwise, the webbing that we use for high lining and long lining is 1-inch wide, and that's bought from specific slackline companies, people that are producing slackline gear.
Is it similar to like tightrope walking then? Is it the same technique, or have you done tightrope walking before?
Yeah, I've tried tightrope walking. I actually tried this year in England for the first time. It's very different because for me the biggest difference is on a tightrope, seeing as a thing, the wire is so tensioned, the wire doesn't move an inch. When you're on it, walking on the line, and you lose your balance, the wire will stay firm, like walking on a wall, like walking on a brick wall. Mm. So it's your movement that needs to gain your balance back. So I'm guessing on a slack line, because it's slack, the line is constantly moving. And when you lose your balance on a slack line, you can actually shift your feet to move the line where you need it to be. And so it's a different way of finding your balance again. And yeah, also you may notice that in traditional tightrope, you have the tightrope walker using a big bar, which he'll sway from side to side as he's walking. That bar is the same thing. It has the same purpose as our arms, which we hold above our head when we slackline. Except the bar slows down the movements. When they move the bar, it's a very slow movement, and so their reaction is, it's much slower. The big difference with tightrope walking and highlining is security. In highlining, we often use security, and in tightrope walking, they rarely use security.
That's crazy. Why would anyone want to do that high up without nothing to save them if they might fall off it?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I suppose it's like it's the same people who climb, who go rock climbing, like sort of free climbing, compared to people who do it rope. So it must be adrenaline rush.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that it must get to a stage where they would be so dialed in what they're doing, so prepared and relaxed, that in fact taking away the security is not going to change their technique. Their technique is already where it should be to do that kind of effort. But the thing is, with highlining, when they remove the security, they will also reduce the difficulty level. So a shorter line is easier. Often when highliners who practice free solo will do free solo, they will halve their personal best to reduce the difficulty level to take out the security. For example, a highliner that can walk 100 meters of highline, he would never ever walk 100 meters free solo highline. He would always reduce the difficulty, for example, by doing 50 meters free solo. Yeah.
Do you find any benefit in everyday life from like doing it? Do you find like, because of the, like your balance, you like sort of, it might sound a bit strange, it's a bit straight and like a bit weird, but like, do you find walking easier? Do you find balancing easier? Do you find any benefit from slacklining to everyday life in sort of your fitness or anything like that?
Yeah, for sure. It's more in my attitude than my fitness. I feel like slacklining and rigging highlines and creating projects to be such a complex problem-solving exercise that just in my regular life, just regular problems, I seem to approach them with a more analytic, relaxed approach, and I get less stressed these days. I remember in the past, I used to feel stressed about speaking in public or I don't know, doing new things, for example. And now, after, like, since I'm doing highlining so much, it seems that being spontaneous is easier and more relaxed in approaching the unknown and staying calm. I like it.
Yeah, no, I think I'm a bit fat to do slacklining. Is there like an ideal weight to like do it? Because I'm guessing, obviously, the fatter you are, the heavier you are, the more it's not going to be enjoyable. But the lighter you are, it might be more enjoyable. Is there like that the case, or does everyone do it?
No. There's no weight limit. Like, it's when you're slacklining between the trees, it's you who decides how high you want the line to be. So if you feel like it's a little high to jump down from, then you would just make it lower. And it could be like the height of a step, you know, going up a step. And standing on the line isn't necessarily more effort than standing on the ground. You just place your feet on the line and use your arms above your head to keep your balance. And then as soon as you feel out of balance, it's like you take a step down onto the ground. There's no weight limit. Anyone can do it. Kids, old people, and yeah, it's a great exercise just to improve your core muscles, just to like feel stable in everyday life or so.
Well, I'm guessing you're more focused and more concentrated on things that can go from slacklining to, as you say, like sort of like everyday life.
Yeah, it's kind of like yoga. When people practice meditation or yoga, they work on their breathing every day. And you can see slacklining in exactly the same type of activity as meditation. If you approach slacklining with the ambition to calm your nerves and to relax and focus and concentrate, then me, for example, I think a lot about my breathing when I'm on the line. And I'm always thinking about my breathing, timing my steps with my breathing. And so when I come off the line, it's like I've been doing meditation. I feel relaxed, sometimes even more relaxed than before I went on the line. And someone could easily set up a small line and practice, and daily practice could help to calm them down.
Do you do it barefooted, or is there any special footwear for it, or is it just what you wear?
Yeah, well, some people like to do it in shoes. Many people choose to slackline barefoot, but this year we had a show where there was so much snow that the snow went up to our thighs. We're standing on the ground, the snow was going up to our thighs. And the performance, we started the performance on the ground, we went up high, and then we went back to the ground. And if we were barefoot in that performance, we would have lost our toes. So we have these special, they're kind of like socks but with rubber on the outside. They're called skinners, and that's what we use to walk on the line when it's cold. Or we find that when we do tricks, the extra grip helps us to stand back up on the line.
Cool. So, when you're not slacklining and touring the world, have you got any other hobbies or anything you like to do?
I really like cooking. I like cycling too. Cycling is was my big sport before I was slacklining.
Well, you're in the right place, the south of France, to cycle.
Yeah. I love to travel by hitchhiking. Hitchhiking is a big passion of mine. And yeah, in France it's great for that too. In Europe, hitchhiking is great fun. Yeah.
Not dangerous, you don't have people saying, really? It's a bit strange that, or...?
To be honest, like, it depends on the country. In some countries in Europe, it's very common to hitchhike. But I found that in England, when I was hitchhiking in England, many of the people that would take me, so in an average journey, you would get like 5 or 6 different rides. And I found in England, more than in any other country that I had hitchhiked, many people that took me, it was the first time they had seen a hitchhiker. Now, compare that with a village where I was living and working in France, where to get to work, I would hitchhike every day. There and back. There, hitchhiking is so simple that I would stand on the side of the road, put up my thumb at the first car, and they would stop. And for like 10-15 minutes, you have a conversation from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. You get out of your car, you go on with your day, and yeah, it can be as normal as taking the car to work.
Is there a community of hitchhikers then? Is it like, because like you're not the first person I've heard mention that this and that week about hitchhiking. Is there some sort of community of hitchhikers that do it for enjoyment, or is it merely a means to an end?
When we decide to go from point A to point B, we are presented with many different options in this modern day world. We can go by bus, we can go by train, we can go by plane, but often when you take the bus or the train, the people around you, they have their heads down, they're looking at their smartphones, they have their earphones in, and it's sometimes quite difficult to start a conversation. It's not very social. But when you're hitchhiking, you go from point A to point B with a conversation. It's, for me, the most friendly and social way to travel. And yeah, I've never had a problem hitchhiking in the 8 years that I've been hitchhiking. Never had a problem. Super nice. Like,
right.
I've noticed that it's just the people who, like, it's only nice people that will stop and help out a hitchhiker. You never get unkind people who would offer to help. That's the thing, like, it's so spontaneous that you just meet the nice ones. You meet the good people.
That's crazy. That's like one thing I've never done is hitchhike. Like one thing I've never done. I mean, I've like seen them. To be fair, I see them quite regularly because of the job I do, I drive and go over the Humber Bridge, and there's always hitchhikers on the Humber Bridge, mostly. But like the car workers to try and get back in to Wimbledon and things like that.
Like trade plating.
Yeah, what's all that trade plating about? What's it?
Well, have you ever seen on British roads people holding up a number plate?
Yes, yeah.
That's a community of trade platers, and they are similar to hitchhikers, but it's more official. They're the kind of people that deliver rental cars, and
right.
So they have a way to get there, but no way to get back. And so they stand on the side of the road, just like hitchhikers, and they hold up this number plate, and they are waiting for other trade platers or other delivery drivers to pick them up. I once met a trade plater when I was hitchhiking, and he explained it to me. And my first reaction was, where can I find one of these plates? Is it going to speed up my hitchhiking or not? It's just like a red number plate.
Yeah, I know the sort, and that's exactly the sort that the people on the side of the road hold. So maybe I might...
Yeah, it's quite strange.
Yeah, it's...
I never imagined.
Sorry, go on.
I never really understood how that thing works, apart from that it was an official way to hitchhike. But yeah, you should pick them up. Like, they're just waiting for a ride.
I bet you meet and loads of interesting people from, like, all religions, all cultures, all different backgrounds.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's my favorite part about hitchhiking.
What's the nicest car you've ever been picked up in?
Well, this summer, a few times, I've been picked up by... Oh, yeah, okay. So we were hitchhiking from the south of France to Holland, and we were in the middle of France, and it was kind of getting late, and we weren't sure if we were going to make it all in, like, one day. It was pretty optimistic. And so all of a sudden, at, like, 7 o'clock at night, we meet some Belgians who were driving to Belgium. So that's, like, 80% of the way. And so we were so happy to go with them. They picked us up, and it was a couple, like an old couple who were driving. And they said, yeah, no problem. It's going to be late when we get to Belgium, though. What would you like to do when we get there? And we said, just drop us on the side of the road. We have all we need to camp. Like, it's no problem. And they said, no, we can't just leave you on the side of the road at midnight. We're going to invite you to stay at our house. And so, sure enough, at midnight, 1 o'clock at night, they invite us into their house, and they cooked a meal for us, and we stayed there in, like, their spare room. And basically, the next morning, at 6 o'clock, their daughter was driving to Brussels, which was even further in our direction. And she had offered to take us immediately the next morning. So it's like the parents had picked us up when we were hitchhiking, mm-hmm. and the journey continued with their daughter the following day. And yeah, it's moments like that you realize the strangers are just friends you haven't met yet, you know? The whole world is kind, and you meet kind people everywhere, no matter what background, whether you can't speak that language or whether you've never met someone like that, whether they're fat or whether they look strange, whether their teeth are weird. Like, there's happy people everywhere, people who love to smile, love to have a conversation. And yeah, that's really the kind of diversity that you would find when you hitchhike. Just you don't make judgments. Yeah,
we need more people like you in the world, Jack. You've cheered me up, and you've got a really, really awesome attitude, just like towards life, in every approach you do. And that's like,
thank you.
It's like quite uplifting, because I'm grumpy. Everyone says I'm grumpy, like it's because I'm getting old, and like I don't like people in general. But to hear someone like you say that, it just gives people like that bit of hope and think there is humanity. Humanity can maybe rebuild, because the way humanity is going at the minute is going down the pan. But there's people like you out there that we probably, and we do need more people like you to just have that attitude, like, just enjoy life. Don't, like, worry about, don't, like, get embroiled in things. Don't let technology, money rule, sort of be like, go out there and just have fun and be nice to
people. Just take it easy. Yeah, man.
That's it. So, if people wanted to find out about you, you're on Instagram.
I'm on Instagram. My name is Slackline Dan, connected. And otherwise you can find me on Facebook under the same name, Slackline Dan.
Yeah.
And my performance crew is Hul Deuce. If you want to find out about Highline Performance, type HuleDouce to find out what we do about slacklining in the skies with instruments. It's been nice to have this conversation with you.
It's been wicked. Have you got a YouTube channel?
Yeah, my YouTube channel is Daniel Larriwell.
Right, and can, like, we find all that on your Instagram page, or?
Yeah, my Instagram page, there's all the links you need.
There we go. So, like, what I'll do, I'll put your Instagram page on, and then people can go from there, and we'll do that. But thanks again for coming on. Like, share, as I say to any, like, sort of, when I say to everybody, anyone's welcome on the podcast, just send me a message through Twitter or Instagram, and we'll just get you on. So,
yeah, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure to be on here.
That's all right. Well, it'll be up.
Have a great evening.
It'll be up in a few hours, so I'll get the links over to you, and thanks again.
Bye-bye.
All right, cheers, thank you. Bye-bye. Bye. The Tea Biscuits Podcast.